Everything, yeah. And a lot of people, some a few people know about this. When I prototype things, I'll make them out of Lego.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Making Magic Podcast. I'm Sean Jay, your host, and I'm a professional magician, speaker, and 3D designer. And this is all about inspiring interviews with the movers, the shakers, the visionaries, and the makers, the wizards behind the curtain that make the magic for you. Now, if this is your first time tuning into the show, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to watch this stuff. And I really do mean that when I say that, because this is a labor of love and a project of passion. My friends, thank you for joining me. Maybe you've already decided to subscribe to the show, and if you haven't, why the heck not? It's so easy to do. You just click the red button below. Perhaps you're just listening to the sound of my voice on an app like Spotify or the Apple Podcast app, the purple one that you see on your phone, your watch, or your iPad. Just got the show listed there so I can share my message and with others and inspire more people through these interviews. So feel free to type in Making Magic with Sean Jay on the podcast app. You'll find it, and maybe you'll decide to leave a nice, healthy 5-star review after listening to some of these interviews. Hopefully I'm bringing value and intellectual, inspiring, engaging interviews into your life. So let's meet our next guest. He's a creator, consultant, producer, designer, and director of illusions and magical effects for television, film, and live performances. From the stages of Coachella and the theaters of Las Vegas to Netflix originals and David Blaine productions, yes, performers around the world have sought to have Enrico on their creative team. Please welcome, I am just so excited for this, Enrico de la Vega, the hidden gem, the underground legend. Welcome, Enrico, to Making Magic. You're going to love this, guys. Hey, Enrico, thanks for joining me on Making Magic.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Yes, this is going to be a fun chat here. So you fit the bill for the movers and the shakers, because I talk about interviewing the movers, the shakers, the visionaries, and the makers. Actually, you've probably worn all of those hats at one point in your career, I would say, right?
That's fair to say.
Yeah, yeah. So let's start off with a story. And I always like to start off the show with a story about the very first thing that you created, you made. And this could be something great, this could be something bad, and funny stories are always welcome. It could be a prop that you built, or it could be a original, unique concept that you created. I know you've got different areas there.
Wow, that's a tough one. The very first thing that I created was probably something when I was a junior back at the Magic Castle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was part of the stage routine that my sister Lisa and I did. And it was, since my last name is De La Vega, that is Zorro's last name. So when that Antonio Banderas movie Zorro came out, it was very, very important for me to do something for the namesake, right?
Okay.
So I did a Zorro-themed routine.
Okay.
Something with a sword, and it was kind of fun. It was a little fencing, Spanish rapier, and I took a lady up on stage, borrowed her ring, placed it inside of a glass, covered it up with a foulard, and handed it to her to hold on to, and she could hold it and ring it and stuff. And I put the sword in the background, standing up on this table, and I turned it so the middle section of it was covered by stained glass. You could see the top of the sword, you could see the bottom of the sword. Then I walked over to her, took the glass with her ring in it. You can hear it ringing. Sound vanishes, uncover it. Ring is gone. She's like, oh my gosh, where'd it go? Then I would flick the glass, it would ring, I'd flick it again, and then I'd throw my hand up, and then I'd point to the sword, and you see her ring, blink, fall into the hilt of the sword.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was one of the first things that I made that was very fun to do. Haven't done that in a long time, though. Should bring that back.
This is a first that I'm hearing this, and this might be a first for a lot of viewers or listeners. I don't know how buried away this was in the De La Vega repertoire,
Oh, super buried.
but by the way you're describing it, it's like really nostalgic, from the history books. But I think it's time to, there's a way you could probably put a modern spin on that.
Oh,
And
there is completely. Yep, 100%. Bring it
so
back. Nobody
that's
steal
a
it. Bring it
yeah, why not? And
back.
your story is one of the rare ones in the sense that I think you've selected very carefully, because that sounds like something so good. Because I can't believe everything that you've ever done has been amazing and fantastic, right? There's always, ups and downs, right?
Thank you for saying that. Amazing is, I will agree with that in the sense that sometimes they're amazingly good and fun, and sometimes they're amazingly bad. So,
Okay.
yeah, yes, I've created a lot of amazing things.
Okay. And then whatever subsection falls under that umbrella of amazing, you have one
Yes.
or the okay. Okay. Just wanted to point that out to our viewers and our listeners. We always don't create our greatest hits the first time around. I think that it's pretty obvious, but a lot of people get caught up in that and they freak out when they have this idea and they go through all this work, all this time and money, and it doesn't end up like what they want. It ends up being a flop. And so just nobody's perfect, and expecting perfection on the first time or every time, that's kind of a not a good goal to have, because it's like a
Never a good goal,
fool's
yeah.
pole.
Yep, never a good goal to have, especially with magic. Our good friend Ray Pierce always said, when you're building magic, you're going to build something at least three times. Because the first time is the prototype, the second build is the rehearsal one that you ruin, and the third one is the one that you use for performance. And that one usually gets ruined too. So you probably have to build a fourth and a fifth.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm surprised three sounds actually a little bit of a low number, because I've heard, I talked to Franz Harari. He said on average it takes him six,
Yes.
others seven, eight, nine. I've done 12, 15 times just to get it
Yep.
right.
Yep, three at the least.
Yeah, three at the least. That's a good kind of guesstimate, kind of a description of that. All right. And what was the reason? Well, I think you already mentioned the reason why you made this first piece was just to pay tribute and to make the Zorro connection. Was there any other reason?
The other reason was because I wanted to do something with a sword, and everybody had done, card stab
Yeah.
or slicing the apple and stuff. And I love all that stuff, but there's so many more people out there who do it a whole lot better than I do. So I thought I'd try to do something totally different.
Okay. To me, it sounds like a scaled up version. There's a very small illusion with a
Yes.
little sword on a wooden stand, right? Samurai sword?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I remember that thing.
Yeah.
That thing was fun.
That is a that is one of my favorite little apparatus collector display pieces, because it's actually really cool. It's not like a silly little, plastic thing that looks like what it is. I think this mini sword illusion is almost believable. Like if you had this on your shelf, you could tell make up some kind of story about it and go into it,
Right. Yes, totally.
And the fact that you turned it into a larger stage piece is really fascinating. What did you learn from making this piece?
Oh, what did I learn from making that? Have more outs than I originally planned for.
Okay.
Yeah, because without going into method,
Yeah.
Sometimes acquiring the lady's ring was problematic. Oh God, if I told you the method, people would freak out because it's completely impractical. But it
That's why it
worked.
works at the castle. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm
It worked
kidding.
great. Oh man, you know what? I did it once at the Magic Castle Academy Awards one time. No way, is that where it was? I think it was the Castle Award, or was it an It's Magic? I can't remember which one it was, but I think it was the Castle Awards. But after the ring had appeared on the other side of the stage, on the sword, I do this move where I swing the sword around slowly.
I have her hold her hand out. Exactly where you're going with this.
Yeah, I have her hold her hand out, and at the castle, probably like 7 out of 10 times, I was able to get the sword on their finger and let it slide down, and it would just cap the end of their finger to where I could pull the sword and it would go onto their finger.
Which is good, which is amazing in theory if it works every time.
Yeah. So I tried for it every time. Other times it just fell into her palm. One time, so the time at the awards banquet, I got a little excited because the response was really good when it appeared.
Yep.
And I swung around a little too quickly and the ring went flying off.
Yep.
The stage, thank God it hit the curtain. It hit the leg and fell straight down. And I just kind of stood there for a second and waited till it settled. Got a good laugh out of it and then walked over and got it.
Just be lucky that there wasn't a loose stone on there.
Yes. Or some grill on the ground, some air conditioning grill on the ground.
Yes. Years ago, when I was not as smart as I am today about blocking and where I'm performing, I was performing outside over a metal grate that, you know, where the water drains. I happened to be next to it. I was street performing. I was, when I was younger, did a lot of actual busking street performing.
Yes.
Like the good real stuff. Deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I would do this thing where I borrowed a $100 bill. And of course, there's so much built-in comedy there just from asking for it. And there's this young kid, you know, young whippersnapper, whatever. Anyways, the guy gave me a $100 bill and everything was fine until I myself got a little too excited and it slipped out of my hands. And the bill was folded into eighths, as you know, and there's a V, and it kind of stays kind of sprung open like this. And thank goodness for that. Because literally the way it fell right in one of the gaps, and the V stopped it, right? It was like pushed flush
at
the top of the gap, and I just looked down, and everybody thought it was gone, but then, of course, closer inspection revealed it was just wedged, just like the V had wedged it, and I very slowly and carefully plucked it out, and I took several steps back. I said, let's try this again, you know, because that would have been a $100 mistake right there. So, yeah, everybody has those crazy stories. So I get it. Rings bring in their own bit of risk.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. But that the high risk was high yield reward. So when it worked, it worked.
Big time yield reward. I completely agree. First, the finale of that effect is amazing, and then that display, the way you do it, yeah, I could see that looking really cool. So
there was one little nuanced thing at the very end of it too, which was hilarious, but I thought it was actually kind of fun too. On the table where the sword stand was, there was also a little tiny vase with a rose in it. So after I gave her ring back, little bit of applause, I would turn and get the tip of my sword onto the rose and flick it, and it would fly over my head into my other hand, and then I would hand it to her. And that was fun.
In true Zorro fashion.
Yeah.
I mean, you were Zorro there, right? I mean, there.
I was the bald Zorro, yes.
The bald Zorro.
Actually, that was pre-bald times. I had the hair.
You had something to show for it. I think it doesn't matter at this point because, right, Zorro, didn't he wear like a bandana on his head anyway?
He did. Now I can go back to it. But I didn't want to wear the whole mask thingy and go cosplay. Actually, probably now it's probably a good idea.
Now you can do whatever you want. You can put on a thing on your head. And, I mean, look, Paul Harris did it. He doesn't care. You know, he changes. He uses a new design every time. It's colorful.
Oh, it's great.
And that's
he keeps changing with the times. He's like the Madonna of magic.
He's a very, very special person in so many ways. What a cool guy on so many levels.
Oh, completely.
But just wanted to point that out, that he was able to successfully transition and rock out the bandana. No problem.
Oh, man, and it's always great.
So
take a note from that guy.
I think you can. You could take a lot of advice from PH. All of us can learn from Paul.
No doubt.
Yeah. Knowing what you know now, well, what would you wish you would have told your younger self to prevent making the mistakes that you may have made when you were much younger?
Knowing what I know now, what could I, if I went back, told my younger self, don't make these mistakes?
As far as building and creating and that, those kind of things.
You know what? It would probably be to slow down. Because I would tend to rush builds in the past.
Hmm.
And the haste would make way too much waste. I've since slowed down quite a bit, almost to a point where it might be a little bit bad. I overbuild things and I take a little too long to build things. But I always find something a little bit better to do with something. Mm-hmm. And then I always run out of time to make it what I want it to be. But it is what it is. We make what we make.
Right. Right. Slowing down is good. A lot of people need to hear that, actually. Not only in magic, but just in life in general. I was talking to one of my guests, and he said that he wished that he would have actually enjoyed the moment of each highlight of his career that he was doing, whereas he was just focused. This is Franz Ferrari. He said he was just focused on what's the next big thing. And he never really fully took in and absorbed. This was when he was much younger. He's talking about he just never absorbed the moment. Like he was doing, he had all these really cool highlights, but because he was focused on whatever was next, he never absorbed how amazing it was to have full access to the pyramids of Giza, for instance, in Egypt, or to have a whole thousands of people marching in the street, and, making formations that created his name. I mean, just all the working with Michael
so
Jackson,
dope.
All these one of a kind, one time, once in a lifetime experiences. Most people never even get one sliver of that in their life, and he's had many of those. And he just, now that he's older and wiser, he's like, man, I could have really enjoyed that more. Now I can't go back and get it.
Wow, I didn't know that about him.
Yeah, that's episode 2. You can hear about that. I mean, really fascinating guy. And
100%.
It's just a reminder to all of us to kind of consider the old piece of wisdom. The present is called the present because it literally is a gift. It's like a present. Each moment is its own little present that we can take to enjoy. And if we're in our own world, all these little presents, these moments just fly by, and then we end up regretting things and
true.
Savoring them.
That is 100% fact, yeah.
So slow down, Rico says. I agree.
Slow down, yeah.
Slow the heck down. What about something you have recently made? I know you have many different projects. I mean, you have TV projects you've had your hands in, right? I mean, that counts as making something amazing, making magic there, right?
Yeah. Well, something that I recently made. Well, we made a bunch of stuff for Big Trick Energy. We finished filming that in March over in Vancouver. Holy crap, there was so much that we did. I can't even remember a lot of the stuff that we... So many little things, a couple of big things. I'm not going to say anything about that because
right.
It's only the second episode right now. And everybody check out Big Trick Energy on True TV.
No, I get it.
Yeah, so, you'll see some good stuff.
No spoilers on Making Magic, only inspiration and only here to pique your interest to check out Big Trick Energy on True TV. It's a brand new show that Rico's had his hands in. I guess on what would you say you were the like a creative consultant, producer, or
yep, creative consultant, magic producer. I don't know what the credit was that they actually settled on.
Okay,
but yeah, that's what it was.
Okay, and just keeping on with that theme of television, you've also, if I think the second thing going back on the timeline, you were involved in David Blaine's a couple of his specials, right?
Or did one? A couple of Blaine stuff.
Couple?
Yeah,
okay.
More recently. So with his, I was involved in Realer Magic and Beyond Magic.
Okay.
And more recently than that was Justin Willman's Magic for Humans.
Magic for Humans on Netflix, another popular show that's gotten, seems to be doing well. They've renewed it, haven't they?
I believe that they have. He's doing great. He deserves all of that.
Yes. Justin Willman, Magic for Humans. I know people who know nothing about magic, didn't even care about magic, but then they came to me. They're like, hey, have you seen this cool show, Magic for... And I when it came out, I heard that from a number of people, so I think it's doing quite well. And that's so cool that you've had a chance to contribute directly to that. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of builds on that, you just reminded me that
sure.
There's one segment on there where Justin hooks himself and participants up to polygraphs, up to lie detectors. And so instead of, they wanted to know if we could rig a couple of lie detectors to give false readings, false positives and false mm-hmm. negatives. And it was going to be a lot of work. So I'm like, I think I can build a couple. And so I ended up building these two
scratch.
Polygraphs from scratch. Yeah.
Dude.
That were totally, this isn't killing anything for any of your viewers or anything. But it was from scratch with a little paper feeder and a little ink needles.
Wow.
And it was really fun. That was a long build. That was an example of an overbuild.
Over, yeah. It's like, I'm sure he was saying, we just need it for just like these two shots, these two takes.
Pretty much, yeah.
So it was like a remote control thing where you could cause the dial to do like that or something?
Fully remote control. You
wow.
could control the needles, the speed of the needles.
Oh, wow.
You could control whether or not there was a green light or a red light. So there was like a bell and a buzzer for a positive and negative, so to tell if they were telling the truth or if they were lying. So that was all by remote control.
That is awesome. And can I ask if you took an already existing one and kind of dismantled it and redid the parts inside, or did you literally start with nothing and you like made the aluminum body or whatever and did all that too?
Started with nothing.
That's impressive.
We just worked with reference photos, and then I went over to like Harbor Freight and picked up one of those $10 aluminum screwdriver tool cases
uh-huh.
and then just started cutting and filling it with stuff.
Wow. And the way you say it, it's like it was nothing to it. But
it was exceedingly elementary compared to stuff like what Mario makes with his robotic robots and stuff.
Okay.
To the magic.
Okay.
But it was pretty elementary when you compare it to something like that, because it was just basically using remote controlled airplane and servos and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
but the hard part was just like making the little paper feeder. Like, oh, maybe I'll just pull one of those out of an old printer, or I can just make one because all it needs to do is feed it in one direction. Okay, I can make that. And so it was a really fun build.
That's fascinating to hear the pulling back the curtain, going behind the scenes, the insane amount of work that it takes. People just don't get it. They watch a TV show, right? And let's say the episode is condensed. What are they, 30-minute episodes
mm-hmm.
usually?
Yeah. I think Justin's was it 30 or is it 44? I think he may have around 40-minute episodes, yeah.
Okay, 40-minute episodes, and I mean, I edit videos just for myself all the time and for different projects. I know to get even just 1 minute of footage takes hours and hours and hours to get it cut right. So to get 40 minutes of solid TV-ready footage, building all that stuff, cutting it all together, that in itself is a major job.
Yeah, thank God I don't do any of that.
You get to do the fun stuff, right?
Yes, it is the fun stuff.
You better say yes, because they're watching. No, the stuff that I would say is it's more hands-on. It's more tinkering than just cutting footage, I guess. But anyways, each to their own. Some people have fun editing video, but I think what you do is fascinating. What about what maker techniques then? This is actually a perfect segue. And by maker techniques, I mean woodworking, electronics, metal, welding, those kind of things. What kind of techniques would you say Rico would be good at?
Small stuff, micro stuff. I do some woodworking.
Okay.
I haven't gone into welding yet, even though that's what I really want to do. But
okay.
As you know, Sean, I'm very worried that once I get into welding and I can start welding things, then I'm going to have to start building things for people.
Yep.
And that's going to be a lot of building because welding is a huge thing. Oh, I want to learn how to weld so bad.
It's so necessary, right? It's like anytime you want something really super strong, okay, metal. All right, well, I could put holes and screws and nuts and bolts, or I could just weld it and have it just be nice and sleek. And
oh, yeah. Or carbon fiber. I was getting into carbon fiber folding, forming. And that was like, okay, I'm going to step away from that and just go back to the smaller stuff again. So basically a lot of styrene, a lot of wood, a lot of foam core.
Okay.
Using a lot of glues and X-Acto blades and rulers and straight edges and stuff. So that's where my little build skills go.
Okay. I would imagine folding carbon fiber would be quite the challenge.
Oh, that's not fun. It's messy.
Yes, it is. I did some 3D printing of carbon fiber filament for a custom project for Jeff McBride, actually.
Wow.
And that is not easy material to work with.
No. There's pros out there who would, there's a reason why they get paid to do that stuff. So we'll let those guys do that stuff.
Precisely. And I made it there on this machine too, which was even.
Ooh, look at you, little maker.
Yeah. That's my 3D printer back there. That's where I make a lot of my magic. To my right, I guess this is on this broadcast will be, for the listeners, there's a picture of Blackstone, the famous magician. This is Blackstone Jr. from the popular in the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
This magic wand thing is not a 3D printer project. That's wood and foam and shellac.
Did you make that wand?
I did, yes.
Nice.
Yes, I made the wand actually for a routine that I do in my show. It's something that I wanted to do. And it's something that you'll actually be seeing on Masters of Illusion this summer. You'll see what I do with this wand and box.
Nice.
So just teasing that out there. It's a pretty cool effect. It's my own original effect, I believe,
nice.
As far as I can tell. And the hourglass as well, I made that back there. That's a combo of 3D printed stuff, metal, and glass. I had a glass guy do the glass part. I'm no good with glass.
Oh, you didn't do the glass blowing yourself. Okay.
I did not do the glass blowing myself. I don't feel confident enough to do that. It's
not yet.
Yeah. It's I saw the facility where the guy did it and it was fascinating, really fascinating. It's fun to watch people do glass blowing properly.
No doubt. Yeah.
It's like real magic because it looks like they're literally blowing up a balloon. But when you think of what they're actually forming, it's this rigid, sharp, dangerous
thing. It's so cool.
But yeah, it's like glowing orange and it looks literally like magma because that's pretty much what magma is. It comes out of a volcano. It's just liquefied glass and minerals. So, yes, real alchemy, real magic was put into that thing back there.
That's awesome. Can't wait to see that thing work.
Yes, yes, yes. You will be seeing that soon. So enough about me. This is about you, Rico. So
this is your show, man. It's all about you.
No. I am. This is not a. This isn't like a narcissistic venture. This is really. I really enjoy talking to people who are smarter than me, who are better than me at other things, and who inspire me.
Why are you talking to me?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of. I mean, you've done a few exciting things. I mean,
thought you'd go against the wave this time, huh? You swim against the stream on this one episode.
I thought I'd pick the least qualified person to reach out to, and I was like, I think Rico's the guy. So, No. I mean, clearly, this is fascinating stuff that you've been involved in. What about? Are there any maker techniques that you're excited about learning this year? Are you ready to dip your hand into welding? That actually didn't come out right. Dip your hand into welding. That's not going to feel good.
Wow, that's a great visual, dipping my hand into welding.
No, let's scratch that. Are you ready to start learning welding? There you go.
Yes, I'm going to dip my toes into the liquid magma of glass blowing.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, there were a couple of things that were on my 2020 bucket list that, because of COVID, slammed it shut. Three of the things were actually just to learn welding, steel welding and aluminum welding. Mm-hmm. Put those aside for obvious reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would love to get into like 3D printing and stuff.
Oh, you would. It's the new thing. People are doing vital organs that way now.
Yes.
Articles on 3D printed pancreases, or maybe just one has been successfully made. A 3D printed valves, I think, for hearts.
Yeah, for the hearts. Yeah, definitely.
And somebody who knows a lot more about that than I do is, as far as the scientific application, would be Jason Latimer, who's another fantastic. Guy that I am trying to get on my show right now, but he's doing superhero like things, which he does on a regular basis. Yeah. So okay, so we got welding, we got 3D printing, which is another.
3D printing would be awesome. Yeah.
We could talk about that after the program here.
That'd be awesome. Two props that I made for Willman's show for Magic for Humans. And it was a bunch of layered pieces of styrene because I wanted to go. I was essentially hand 3D printing, you know, by going, okay, I need it.
Oh, you're literally squirting the layers and like gluing them together, you mean?
Yeah, because I knew how thick I wanted something to be, but I needed very specific locations for certain things. And so I decided to just layer it up with styrene. I'm like, okay, that'll work. Then at the very end, I go, could have just 3D printed that thing and saved about 2 weeks.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, the interesting thing about 3D printing is it's the design that takes the most time,
yes.
I believe, according to my experience. The 3D printing part only takes time. I mean, it takes time. Of course, the more pieces, the more time it takes, the larger the pieces, the more square footage of the bed, that's when you start taking up a lot of time. The time increases exponentially as the thing moves over.
Yes.
Inches on the bed. So, but yeah, that's a whole science and art in itself, and I'll be happy to chat with you about that. But
yeah.
Back to you. So we talked about styrene welding, and what about the favorite prop or gimmick that you designed in the past? Was it the sword, or was that a routine that you designed using already existing props? Maybe there's something else that you maybe built from the ground up, kind of like that polygraph thing from the past, maybe.
You know, there was one thing that was really fun to make once again, probably overbuilt it, but this is for a reason that it needed to be overbuilt. But on one of Blaine's specials, what was the special after Beyond Magic? He did the balloon flight. But there was a segment that we did for Beyond Magic that didn't make it into the cut. So then they aired it on a subsequent episode.
Okay. Okay.
And it was an Aussie Win idea.
Well, there's a lot of his ideas. I think he's a big contributor, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Aussie goes, "Hey, is this possible?" And Danny Garcia is like, "Yeah, I think it is. If we do something like this." And Danny goes to me, he goes, "Would you be able to make something like this?" And I said, "Yeah, I think that if we did this, this, and this." He goes, "Can you make it for us?" I'm like, "Yeah." And long story short, it was as a close-up effect. You probably never get to see it on the you'll see the effect, you'll never know what it is. Because again, as consultants, as magic creators, what we do, if you see our work, we failed.
Sure. I mean, the whole goal is to hide all the work.
Yes.
And only highlight the end effect.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. The effect, and a lot of the times the performer. So it's like this one thing, I'll just put it this way. Blaine carried it around with him everywhere he went because he loved to practice with it. And it was, that was one of my proudest builds, because usually we'll build something for him and then it's just like, it works. It's great. And it's solid. And then he doesn't need to practice it a whole lot. This thing took practice, but he loved practicing with it. So he used to take it around everywhere he went, and it made it into a subsequent episode.
When you said take it around with him, I was thinking of that alligator, but that's not going to...
He used to do that too.
That used to be his favorite thing that he would carry around.
Yes, it was.
But that wasn't as practical as something that you made that could probably fit in his pocket.
Well, you'd be surprised where we made that thing fit.
Okay. I won't ask, but there was alligator appearances. For those of you who have watched the specials, I'm aware that he's into alligators. He even has his own cards, Gatorbacks, right? Can you say, without revealing too much, whether was this a card thing that was built, or was
it was a card thing?
Okay, so this is a special card thing that David Blaine enjoyed practicing with. Very cool. Well, that's some good. It's good confirmation that you did it right. You did it right. You did it well.
I just realized how hilarious it is to your listeners to be listening to this cryptic stuff.
Well,
going, okay, so there's this card thing. It was good. And can't tell you what it is, but maybe you should look out for it. And you won't know which one it is because he does a lot of cards.
It was a good card thing. And it was on one of his shows.
So ambiguous.
So, I mean, people are used to watching Fool Us. I mean, they talk in code all the time. You know, they're screwing with people. So I think it's okay. I mean, I'd rather talk in code then put this up and somebody goes on the cafe and says, "Hey, they're exposing magic. Stop. That's not what this is about." So
Right.
I'm just trying to inspire people, and we're doing great. Really fascinating stuff. What about what would you consider your biggest DIY fail of all time?
Ooh. Wait, hold on a second, because there's been many.
That's okay. It's all right.
What would the biggest one be?
Yes.
Oh, God. Okay, let me think.
That's okay. I'll edit the pregnant pause out. No worries.
There was this one thing. Okay, got to speak in code again.
Oh, here we go. Okay, codify.
This is amazing. Here was a big DIY fail. We had to pull an object a very long distance in a very quick amount of time. Very rapidly.
Okay.
High velocity.
Okay.
And it was a good distance too. It was a good 25, 30 foot pole. So okay. People were saying, we'll just hook a string up to it and just run. Like, so you want this thing to cover 25 feet by as fast as a person can run.
Yeah, that's not really that great.
It's not really that great. So I took a note off of when we did an MTV show called Room 401, we had a mannequin that was sucked into a, looked like a man. I just say a man. There was a man. It was a mannequin. Reveal. spoiler alert. It was a mannequin. It got sucked into an airplane engine. So it looked like this guy got sucked into an engine.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the speed at which that thing went was amazing. So they basically used this pneumatic ramrod. Same like one that they used.
Linear in... actuator?
Yes. Same one that they used in Die Hard 4, Live Free or Die Hard. Do you remember that scene where he jumps out of the car and the car launches off of some barrier and it takes down a helicopter?
I've seen behind the scenes of Jackie Chan movies where they have pneumatics and things under cars that kick them over, kind of the same thing.
This was basically a catapult. It was like a crossbow launcher for a car. It was a practical launch.
Wow.
So it was this pneumatic actuator that was hooked up to a series of pulleys. So it would only travel 6 feet, but in that 6 feet, it pulled an immense amount of distance.
Major torque.
At an incredible speed. So I took a note off of that and I made this thing with a pulley system, and it was something like a 15 to 1 pull. So I was able to get a 25 second or a 25 foot pull to travel. This thing was probably, I'd say 7 pounds, 6 pounds. Let's say 5 pounds.
So a 5 pound object traveling up a pole.
Actually just traveling straight. And it would cover a 25, 30 foot distance in about a second.
Just flying through the air?
It was airborne a little bit. No, it didn't make it airborne.
Okay.
But it did manage to go from like a good 25 foot pole in less than a second.
Wow. Okay.
And the day that we were filming, it failed. But I can say that my mechanism didn't fail. The knot failed. The knot where the string was hooked up to the prop.
Just too much force.
There was way too much force. And now in testing, all the test video footage that we have, that thing was flying. And it covered a long distance in a short amount of time. It was it was amazing. I was really proud of it. But the DIY fail was, know your knots.
Know your sailor's knots, your fisherman's knots, right?
Yes, because the knot is what failed. And I can say with honesty that I tied the first knot and it failed. And then somebody else tied the second knot and it actually broke that knot.
Wow.
So there was, it was going too fast, but it was amazing during the testing. It was so perfect.
That's the most commonly said phrase, you know, it worked in rehearsal, right?
Yes, it
worked
so
well until you actually say, we're live, we're recording, and action, and then the thing blows up in your face, right?
Yeah, there's a weird phenomena that happens in the universe where when you have a camera on something, it just stops working. when you hit record, DIY props fail.
It happens a lot, a whole lot. I have a story, sort of similar, and I kind of mentioned it in previous episodes, but basically something that I built that used electronics that was supposed to be on a TV show, and I was supposed to be on in 2 hours, and it wouldn't work. It wouldn't turn on. And I flew cross country to do this. and the producers were expecting me to do this, and I had pitched it to them, and I said, this is the great thing that I'm going to bring and do on your show. And they were like, yeah, bring it, let's do it. And me being a dummy, I think I mentioned this on the Mario episode, I did not have a repair kit that I brought with me.
Oh.
Duh. Yeah. Yeah, I brought the goods that everything was all the electronics that was supposed to be used, but no way of repairing it. And they didn't have the tools that I needed, and I was just making that newbie mistake of assuming that, oh yeah, I can just fix it and somebody will give me some tape and I could. No. I learned that lesson the hard way.
And what have we learned from this?
Always bring backups, especially of electronic props, and always bring a repair kit to repair your electronics or anything that you crafted, whether it be tape at the very least, or, you know, just don't make the assumption that it's going to work, because it's like printers too. Right? When, if you think back to when you're in school, right? Oh, the report's due the next day. Guess what? My printer failed. It ran out of ink. You know? That's like a common.
That's exactly it. That's why every project that we're on, every project that I do,
mm-hmm.
I've got two bags that I carry with me every day. One of them is this backpack, and that's my crash kit, which basically has
crash kit.
It's a crash kit. Yeah. So basically, you know, the crash cart that they have in ERs, when somebody starts to code blue, they start to have a heart attack and they bring in the crash cart and emergency. It's got the paddles. It's got the.
Yeah.
It's got everything to save the person's life. So I've got that on my back all the time, and it's got everything we need to repair anything that we're doing that day. And then we've got our go bag, which is a little carry-on size Pelican 1510. And it's just got all the supplies that aren't necessarily tools that aren't on my back.
Mm-hmm.
So
probably the more delicate tools that you want padded.
Maybe? More delicate tools that we want padded. A whole bunch of extra, like, things that we don't want folded, pieces of paper, cardstock, more styrene, foam core, felt, glues, and every kind of tape imaginable.
Yeah.
And also just things that, you know, reels and magnets and all these different kinds of ways to cut things. And so we always have those two bags with us as a just in case.
I think that's very smart. 1510, when you said 1510, I was like, I got another hourglass that I made actually in a 1510 right now.
And yes!
Because it's carry-on, I was like, I love Pelican. I love my Pelican stuff. The very first Pelican case I ever got was for a large speaker I was using for street performing. And it's big. It's a big honkin'. I mean, it's fat. It can never go on a carry-on. But I was so happy when I found the 1510, I was like, oh, there's a little cute Pelican. There we go. And it just works. So.
Oh, it's great.
I'm a fan of those. It
always carry on. It fits into any carry on on any plane. So it's great.
Yes. Yeah. It's the 1510, I believe, it's smaller than a lot of the carry on suitcases.
Yes. It's made to be to fit the smallest overhead in the smallest plane that allows carry on.
Yep. That is exactly what I'm looking at right now. Yep. I got you. Yeah.
I love those things.
Yeah. You could throw them off the side of a house and whatever's in there will be fine. As long as you padded it properly, it should be fine.
Oh yeah. And they make for good misdirection too. When you're filming out in the street, you just drop it and people turn their heads and then you can load the elephant.
That is another secret only found here, right here, folks, on Making Magic. You heard it. Rico's dropping knowledge secrets like you've never heard before. If you want to know how David Blaine levitated, well, they just took a big giant Pelican case, they dropped it, everybody was looking the other way.
And then we brought in an elephant.
And then you brought in the elephant that was underneath the actual...
Close, beside. It was beside.
beside him, and then the trunk reached up under David and picks him, like,
very gently and lovingly, yes,
something like that. And I think in the pelican case, now we're talking about animals, the pelican case, the elephant, you have to pack extra peanuts in the pelican case.
100%, especially because that's what we get paid too. So that's
that's right. That is right. Not only do the elephants get minimum wage, but poor people like Rico get paid in peanuts, man. Gotta raise
this guy's salary. Delicious, though. Glad I don't have an allergy.
Gotta raise this guy's salary. He's not allergic to nuts or hopefully shellfish. So there you go.
No, yeah. Yeah, you can start paying me in shellfish. We'll see how that works out.
I think you're into that, right? You've spent some time in Japan quite a bit, right?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yes. And I cannot leave this hanging without mentioning magicians and the public, if they watch not regular TV, but it's all over online and just blew up, you know, Cyril Takayama. That was a big part of your life and work, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we grew up at the Magic Castle together. And then he moved to Japan, started his own TV show, and then we started working together a lot from there.
And before that, correct me if I'm wrong, you were, I don't know if you were in charge of or you were a part of this team of magicians doing this hidden camera magic show, which was called...
You Can Do It. You got it.
And I'm going to edit this. Them.
Yes, you cannot edit that. That was a good moment.
Yes, it was them. It was them. It was Rico. It was Cyril, and it was a couple people that are also kind of off doing their own thing, and they're still doing stuff, right?
It was created by myself and Chris Gongora from Magic Castle Junior Group Fame.
Okay.
My sister Lisa, Cyril Takayama, Justin Willman.
Justin was a part of that, right? Now that I think about it, that's right. Justin was a part of that. Yeah.
Yeah, Danny Cole.
Danny Cole, another creative powerhouse, which I'd love to have on the show.
Oh, he's a genius.
Danny.
Oh, get that guy on your show. He's a genius.
Danny's off the chain. Amazing.
Oh, my God. Anything that guy does is just so well thought out.
Yep. 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 The blocks.
Oh. So well thought out.
Stacking the little kids' blocks. That just, I'll just leave that there. People can research Danny Cole, his appearances on the. Appearances, couple on Fool Us, he did it. Mm-hmm. It just blew everybody away, fries everybody. So going back to them. So it was you,
them, yes.
Lisa. Lisa, yeah, Lisa was on the show. She was part of the team. She was visibly.
She was the first person on network television to do the backwards lean. We created We created a version of it for. I'll say version of it because there's an old picture. I forgot the name of the magician. Oh, I should have that in front of me. I should have that in my head. But there's an old picture in the magic book where an old clown is like doing this backwards lean thingy.
So Michael Jackson did not invent the original lean.
Oh, that's the forward lean.
You're
talking about we're talking about the backwards lean, which is now become the matrix lean that everybody
yes like been... this and then off one foot and then leaning like that.
Lisa was the first one to do it on television.
Cool. That
after
is...
we did that, Danny Cole improved on it and made his invisible chair thingy.
The chair, yep.
And then after that, everybody else started going, oh, let's just make our own versions of it. And then it just, but the nice thing is that we created a standard.
Yes. And that thing, this isn't a part of my standard questions, but this makes so much sense to include this here. That effect, talking about creating standards, right? And talking about creating something that everybody wants to do and becomes popular because it really doesn't take, it's simple to understand. It plays to all language barriers. There's nothing to think about. It's just a thing to look at. Oh, it's clearly obvious what's happening. No real description is needed. You just do
right.
it, and people get it.
Yes.
And so, how can you mention how that came to be? Was that one of these weird DIY projects that you just started tinkering around with out of your bag and just playing around and it came to be? Or
it came about from a discussion when we were creating the magic for them, and we started talking about the lean, about the forward lean, the Michael Jackson thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh man, but so many people are doing it on stage. Well, not a lot of people have seen it on television. People have seen Michael Jackson do it in the video. Yeah. And then Chris Gongora goes, anybody ever do it backwards? Or they just lean back and don't fall down? We're like, oh, let's try to make something like that. That was it. It just came from a discussion. Let's just try it the other direction.
That's really cool, because this is a concept that has nothing to do with magic, and everybody should get this in their head and understand that sometimes, well, yeah, there's forward thinking and there's backward thinking, reverse engineering. And when I, you know, lots of times the word backward thinking is, it has a negative connotation, but in this case, quite literally, it took backward thinking in order to make this thing happen.
So, exactly, yeah.
So I would say the concept here is, if you are faced with a big fat problem, just like boom, and you feel like you cannot push past this, sometimes you have to start, you know, going to radical places and doing like the exact opposite of what you were doing.
Yeah.
To maybe make a breakthrough, right?
Yeah, you just have to stop what you're doing, step back, turn around, and look around. Because a lot of the times we've passed the answer. And yeah, that's happened quite a bit. It's like, where am I failing here? Okay, let me just go back. And then you'll find where you've messed up.
Yes. Along the step-by-step journey, you just skipped a step.
Yeah. Or accelerated through one that made everything else domino into oblivion.
Got it. Now that right there is worth the price of admission for this whole interview, in my opinion, because people need to be reminded of that. It's happened to me when I was making stuff like that. I was overcomplicating my life, and it turned out actually it was a very simple solution, and blew my mind when I came across it. So it was just like, really? Am I that dull that I skipped over this one? Yes, I was. Not that I was dull. I was too hasty, focused on the next thing.
See? You were excited. You were
shiny
excited
object.
You could see the ending. You could see the end. It was in sight.
So close. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. We all have that. How about this? Was there anything that you've ever created by accident and it turned out to be amazing?
Was there anything that we created by accident and it turned out to be
amazing? You were just tinkering with something. You were tinkering with some styrene. You were tinkering with some tape and glue and cutting things. And like, here's an example. Like, I spoke to Lysander, and he said this dancing handkerchief thing that he does in the show, it normally was supposed to be very rigid, but then a piece broke, and then it started flopping around. And his father was watching his show, and his father said, "That was great what you did." And he said, "What are you talking about? The thing broke mid-show." And he said, "No, you need to do that every show." He said, "What do you mean?" "Well, the thing was so lifelike. How did you do it?" "My thing broke." Mm-hmm. And out of that accident, it's much more animated and lifelike now, and that he has to make it that way every time.
So that's a great question. Well, has anything broken, or like by accident, have we figured something out?
Yeah.
I'm sure there is something. I can't think of it. Accidental discovery.
Oh, you must have made at least one. I mean, with projects that you've worked on.
Yeah, there's plenty. Because I feel like almost everything is an accidental discovery, you know?
With the custom, yeah.
Yeah, because you go, how is this going to work? I don't know. Let's figure it out. And that's always the big thing when people are like, how are we going to make this? I'm like, I don't know. Or so when I'll suggest an idea, that's a great idea. How are you going to do it? I'm like, I don't know yet. We got to figure it out.
Yeah, that's almost my life on a daily basis. Somebody asks me a question, can you do X, Y, Z? Sure. Hang on. Yeah. How the heck do I do that? Let's find out.
So it's always a way.
And it usually happens too when you commit, right? If you commit, and if you commit pretty strongly to it, you'll make it happen because you've committed.
That is 100% fact.
Especially with TV and deadlines, which you work within, it's like, you know, it's David Blaine, it's Cyril Taki, it's Justin on Netflix. They want this thing, they want this box, they want this polygraph. Well, figure it out. And so you did.
One thing that was an accident, which was actually it was more like a joke. It was Cyril's hamburger from Poster.
Dude, that's like one of the most iconic things that he's known for now. So you're saying to me that was just a fleeting thing, just like, that would be kind of silly if we did that, or
that was a joke. It was actually a joke. We were walking around Tokyo late at night. We may or may not, or mostly may, had had too much to drink. And we were walking down the street, saw a burger joint. I'm like, God, I'm hungry. He's like, so am I. Let's go and get a burger. Walked up to the place. It was closed. And we're like, well, there's that. Hey, how hilarious would it be, dude, if you could just pull that poster or pull that burger right out of that poster and we'd be feasting on a Moss burger right now. He's like, yeah, that's stupid. I'm like, yeah, that's dumb. And I put it in the notes. And the next day, reading through all the notes of all the stupid stuff, that's the big thing too. It's like, carry a piece of paper with you.
Yes, and write down everything, right? No idea is a stupid idea. Just write everything down.
Everything. And there's a ton of stupid ideas. And so we're going through the stupid idea list and like, this is stupid, that's dumb. Burger from Poster. But that's actually kind of funny and do it. Oh, we need a time for, you want to? Oh, let's see if we can. Okay, let's put that in there. So it was the finale to a segment in front of a burger joint. And honestly, it was just going to be a throwaway. Like, this is just another, this will be fun. Let's just pull a burger out of the poster. It turned into a signature piece.
That's what I'm saying. When you said the burger, I was like, dude, that's when people think of Cyril, they think of the burger. They probably think of the old man at the theme park. That's another iconic thing that I remember. There's all this crazy stuff that he did, in the market outside. He did a great Wonder adaptation, or not Tommy, Ricciardi, Canary.
Oh, yeah, his version of Olek. That was fun.
Yeah. I mean, just so many. Oh, and then there was the thing in Brazil where the sand art, rearranging the sand to make the picture of the person. I mean, that was another weird,
fascinating effect. I wasn't there for Brazil.
Okay.
I know what you're talking about, though. Yes.
Okay. I'm just rambling off things that really stuck out to me. But the burger thing, I mean, by far, I mean, if anybody were to just Google right now, like Cyril Magic Hamburger, or just hamburger magic, probably Cyril's face is going to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. It went viral before we knew what viral was.
And this was at least 10 years ago we're talking about.
Oh, right? Many moons ago. How long ago was that?
Maybe 15 years ago.
Probably. Probably like 12, 13 years. That's a fair assumption. I'm not good with numbers. I'm not a relation.
That one caught me off guard. Okay. I'll just leave that. I'll just let that go.
You're not allowed to comment on that.
Nope. I'm aware of this.
I'm kidding.
No, I'm here to support everybody, regardless of where you come from or what you look like.
What are you trying to say? See, you're just digging now. Next question.
I'm just, man, damn it. Okay. That'll be edited too.
That was you keep because it's fun.
No, you said I'm not a real. I wasn't even thinking. I was just trying to put a pinpoint. I was like, when was he doing it? But anyway, it was awesome though. Oh, and what that, going back to that, what that turned into, it was the burger concept first, but then his signature thing. Like, I was talking with other people that were bringing up Cyril's work. And people were telling me, well, he's the guy that likes to pull stuff out of flat objects, because he did a burger, he did the Lacoste gator from the shirt, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then he was on a subway, and then he shook the thing, and then the bottle
I never thought about that. Yeah.
He did a lot of flat to life stuff, a lot.
That's hilarious. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, because I think the burger started it all. I think that he and you saw the success of it, and he probably said, how can I do more of this? Where you see something flat, and wouldn't it just be cool to just peel it off, and then it's the thing?
Which is an old concept. I mean, art to life. It's a very super, super old concept. I think that the whole burger thing. I think that it was the amount of times the image changed in the poster. So that helped. And the location and then the real people reaction and stuff. But it was because I remember he did that, the old man on the train with the plastic bottle of tea, and he shook that and that popped out.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have done stuff from pulling stuff out of posters, pulling stuff out off of
But it's
pages.
Usually rolling the poster up into a tube and then reaching in. But this is visual where you see it flat on there. Just poke myself in the eye. And maybe something's coming to life off my invisible poster.
And then I hope you do a magic trick right now. You like pop your eyeball out. I thought you were setting me up for a match. Like, look at that.
Yeah, I'm just going to... like that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But you poked the other eye is the problem.
Yeah, I know. It didn't work. It was the wrong eye. I need to come over like that. You're like, oh, shit. Anyway, I did it with the wrong eye, too. See that? So I'm trying to do this interview right, and then I'm screwing this up. And I poked myself in the face. Look at that. You're just seeing,
oh, man.
You're seeing humanity at its finest, Rico.
That's the best.
And we're making history. On making magic, what am I doing?
Right there, you could have been loaded right there again.
Right there? I could have done it. And it's just bothering, it's just really bothering me.
Yeah, see, even better.
Yeah, and that's better. That's better.
See, that's got to be, you have to have that right by your computer now. You can't even, that's got to be loaded and ready.
Yeah, well, see, I have it. I have another monitor over there where I've been doing online shows. My camera's normally set up there. I have a little eyeball in a little bowl, actually, ready to go. This is my interview section, but I need now two eyeballs. I need to have one on each. Shit.
Yes.
Okay, here we are. All right. So, okay, now this is like considered the lightning round. It gets go really fast.
I'm not good with speed. Let's go.
Oh, okay. I forgot Rico's slow. That's right. Rico's slowing down. He's trying to slow down. I'm usually pretty slow as well, actually.
Good save. Good save. Go, continue.
No, it's true. I have people tell me that I work too slow and that I take too long to say things, and people who are very passionate get frustrated with me quite often. They say, come on, Sean, just hurry up. It's taken forever for you to say whatever.
Yeah, patience is a virtue for people. Come on, people.
Well, it's
like, you want it good or do you want it fast?
I think it's an American thing. I think it's an American
fact
thing. Everybody wants stuff, instant gratification, and they don't care about slow quality. They want fast something, and they just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another discussion for another channel. What inspired you to be a maker, Rico? Because
you know what's crazy? I am, and it's crazy that I never really considered myself to be one. What inspired me to? If you want to go way back, what inspired me was when I was a kid, when I played with Legos. Sorry, when I played with Lego. There's no S at the end of Legos.
Lego bricks. That's
building everything. Yeah. And a lot of people, a few people know about this. When I prototype things, I'll make them out of Lego.
That's your secret. Wow.
One of the things, yes. Because I tried to prototype things out of wood, and it would take too long to get the tools out and cut something with a bandsaw.
That's fascinating. I've never heard anybody say that.
Yeah. Oh, it's the wrong size. I have to recut some more wood. But if you prototype stuff with Lego, you can do it quite quickly. And you can do corrections incredibly fast.
I mean, that's really true. Now that I think, I never thought about it like that. There are people, right, who build whole life-size statues of things and, you know, characters. So yeah, why not build prop prototypes from Legos?
Oh, we've actually built props with them too. On Magic for Humans, there's a segment on Justin's show where it's called Delivery Drone. And there's a drone, RC drone, that's got a box.
Yes.
And it's got to drop the box into his hands.
Yes.
When the pro drone operator came over to the studio that day, we're like, okay, so here's what we need. We just need this box to be lifted by the... He's like, oh yeah, Mike can carry that. And then we need it to drop. He goes, I don't have anything to release it. Like, don't you... And I was very, very confused because I grew up with model cars and or RC cars and remote controlled airplanes and stuff. And we used to drop stuff, the parachuting guys out of airplanes and, you know, hook up a camera inside and you're like your servo would click the camera, you take overhead shots with remote controlled airplane, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, we've done this before. I did this when I was a kid. You're telling me as it's decades later and as a pro drone operator, you don't have something that'll drop something? He goes,
you
not
would
here.
Think. Yeah.
It's not on there. And so it was, we were about to break for lunch and I said to him, hey, can I borrow one of your servos? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, I'll promise I'll give it back. I just want to borrow your servo. Great. So everybody went to lunch. I went into the studio and I built this mechanism out of styrene, Lego, and a brass hinge around his servo. And
hey,
once everybody came back from lunch, I zip tied it to the bottom of his drone. It lifted up however much weight it could carry. And there we had on the secondary remote. And I would just pull a switch and it would drop the box. That was made mostly out of Lego. And that was actually used in the show.
That is a testament of just the power of Lego. The power of you know, child's play is kind of the concept here. People think that we can grow out of Legos because that's what kids use. But here's a case of, you know, a full-grown man using Lego to his advantage, big time.
It's, once again, it's, you can prototype things very quickly.
That's interesting.
And like, think about how much time it takes for you to go into your CAD program mm-hmm. to do all the measurements and everything else. And,
sure.
But if you have a pile of different size bricks and plates and everything, you can slam it together in probably a good 5-10 minutes. And then if it's wrong, oh, it's a little too short here, you add a little extension.
Yeah, yeah. I never, ever thought about it that way. Everything has its place. Mm-hmm. You know, CAD is good if you want to have things really precise for a good, more or less finished product. But for what you're saying, if you want something real fast, you just want to get to the point, you want to get something, some usable thing.
Yeah, just to get proof of concept.
Proof of concept. There you go. Lego.
Like inside the lie detector, inside that polygraph thingy, to get the paper roll going, I started with a Lego motor, and I built all the mechanism around it.
That is with Lego. So cool. I think that's so cool.
It's fun. You should try, because it's not just straight building anymore. They've got these crazy bricks where you can connect motors to them and have structural support for things. And if you wanted to, you could bend steel with Lego. It's crazy.
So, really?
Oh, yeah.
Bend steel.
They've got things where they, this guy created a bunch of Lego pieces with one or two motors, and eventually it would torque and break a steel rod.
Is there a metal piece that you have to wedge that piece of steel in? Because how can plastic and metal handle the torque? I would think plastic would snap.
Oh, that's the thing, because it would snap, and then he would have to figure out how to... Oh, there's a whole YouTube channel on this guy. He would figure out how to lift 200 pounds with just Lego and a couple of motors. But cool. One of these things, I built a prototype, is sitting over there.
Can you show us possibly, or is it too secret?
Hold on a second.
Okay. Okay. I'm excited.
Trying to figure out whether or not I should show this, but okay. I just won't say what it does.
Okay, it's entirely up to you. Like I interviewed Adam Wilbur, and he had showed me a bunch of prototypes for something he was comfortable sharing, but I'm not trying to convince you to do something that you're going to regret later. So it's entirely up to you.
No, yeah, I just won't say exactly. How's the audio for me right now? Is there a hum or anything?
No, it's fine.
Perfect. Okay, good. So speaking of Lego prototype. This is something that was basically, it's on a piece of melamine for some reason.
But, yeah.
But there's motors in here and gears and rubber bands and wires and stuff. But this thing was an attempt to create something. It was just for proof of concept.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
It's just for proof of concept, and it's... to launch tiny things repeatedly and on command.
Okay, fair enough, yeah. I forgot about, because Lego has been doing this for years. I mean, they would sell kits designed for movement and things mm-hmm. that move and whimsical things like that.
Yeah.
And so what you're doing is you're exploring that, but then crossing over to make something that's normally designed for play or fantasy, and you're making a practical thing out of it. You're making practical applications.
Yes.
Lego.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple more props in a couple more shows that were actually Lego based that I won't tell you about.
Okay.
Because if you see it, the Justin Willman thingy with the drone drop, just know that one was Lego. And yeah, there were a couple other things that we made out of Lego for that show that were behind the scenes parts of machinery.
It's so fascinating, because when you pull back the curtain, and some people think, wow, it must be so expensive to make all these things. And sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes these so-called jerry-rigged contraptions are the ones that do it best, because you got that fast proof of concept and you're able to make it do whatever it was designed to do in time for the show to mm-hmm. create that effect. That's very inspiring. And that is exactly why I have you on this program. See, you're second guessing yourself when you're like, oh, I'm not a maker and this and that. No, man, this is really like, different, fascinating stuff here, and I love it.
Oh man, thanks. You should try it. You should just get a bunch of, I'll recommend some kits to you.
Okay, well that was actually one of my questions, which we're gonna get to in a second. Let's move on to this one. A person that inspired you to be a maker?
My magic mentor, the person that inspired me to be a maker. Mm. Was my magic mentor, Lauren Christopher Michaels.
Lauren Christopher Michaels, and he's from the West Coast Castle guy?
Yes, and he mentored a bunch of people. Cyril, my sister Lisa, Danny Cole, Thomas Meyer went on to win Close Up at FISM at 16, 18 when he was...
Wow.
But he's put out a lot of amazing magicians and a lot of good magic.
The name you said, it says it right there.
Yeah. And I just remember going into his studio for a lesson, and he's like, what do you want to do? I said, I want to make this happen. And he goes, he always taught us to think about what you wanted to make happen first, because figuring out how will come later. He just said, just think about what you want, what kind of magic you want to happen. And then when we got to that point, we're like, how do you make it? He's like, let's start making it right now. And he would just pull out a bunch of stuff in the shop and just start cutting and gluing and welding, not welding, but there's a secret to a different kind of welding. I'm not going to tell you, but welding without welding, so good. And then we would just build props. And I go, wait a second, I didn't have to buy that. You just made that with like some extra pieces of wood, some steel rod, and a mousetrap. That's amazing.
You guys were very lucky to that. I mean, that is so lucky, actually, because that's a very different approach than 99.9% of magicians. Usually they find that they like and appreciate the art, and then they go, where can I buy the stuff? And then they just start getting pre-made stuff, or they start getting books or videos, which is all fine.
It's a good start, yeah.
Yeah, but I think actually starting and going directly into that as your foundation, I think that's fantastic.
That was the thing. I think I didn't realize it until you brought it up, because I never considered myself a maker. I guess I always have been.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a discovery for me. That's cool.
This is both self-discovery, discovery on my part. You're discovering things about you that you may have forgotten, pushed aside, but these are all important things.
Yep.
Important things. So Lauren Christopher Michaels, awesome. Who do you look up to in the maker space, having nothing to do with magic? This can be anybody, like, for instance, Elon Musk, I would consider, you know, he's making cars, even though he's not putting them together by hand. He's got that mindset, you know, visionaries,
yeah.
Makers like that.
Visionaries and makers. The people who I like to watch tinker are people like Mark Rober.
Yeah. Good choice.
He does great stuff. Even Adam Savage does some amazing stuff with his one day builds. If people want to learn how to tinker and just learn how to craft and make different things, his one day builds are just really fun to watch. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize how simple that was. I can probably do that.
I agree. And for those of you who don't know, Adam Savage is not the better, it's up to opinion. He's the half of Mythbusters, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's they both have facial hair. He was the slimmer of the two with facial hair and hair on his head, I think.
Yeah, and he got his start working over at Industrial Light and Magic in the model shop.
Well, that explains a lot, doesn't it? I didn't know that. That's a great place to start.
Oh yeah, he started at the best place, which is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question about that. Okay, so Mark Rober with his Package Thief Glitter Bomb videos. Of course, those are
so good. And the cool thing about it is that he used to work at JPL, right? NASA.
Yes. Yes, he did.
It's my heroes are all nerds, are all smart guys that think outside the box, you know.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. And that's why you are the way you are. And that's why you're working with the best in the business. And that's why I have you here. Because that's people like yourself that I get inspired from. It's incredibly inspiring. And I think the listeners and the viewers are going to get a lot out of this. So going back to where you were almost going to go earlier, as far as the Lego and other things, perhaps, are there any resources that you can recommend to anyone out there who's interested in tinkering with Legos, maybe some unknown kind of stuff that most people don't think about, or maybe there's books or there's articles or there's things that people can see or read that can inspire them to be thinking along this path? To think backwards rather than forwards, and to take their mistakes and realize how valuable they could be.
Well, that's one of the reasons why. One of the reasons why I recommend people play with Lego is because it does feel like it's backwards thinking. It feels like, oh, we're regressing back to playing with toys. But then when you see how intricate some of their kits are, and you see the machining and the engineering that goes into it.
That's a good point.
It's quite detailed. And then, because a friend of mine was saying, okay, I want to get into the electronics and stuff like that. I'm like, buy a Lego electronic kit. They have these kits called Lego Technic.
Okay.
And they're made for engineering with moving parts.
Perfect. Great. That's good.
So those are...
How do you spell that?
T-E-C-H-N-I-C. Lego Technic. So if you just get... And they're pretty pricey. Okay. But they're worth it. There's... When you get something that's got a good moving system to it, a motorized moving system to it, and you learn how the gears work and...
Yeah,
and just about how you can make complex angles and complex structures with something as simple as molded plastic, and it's strong. You know, there's one, it's like
ABS. A remote.
Yeah, there's a remote controlled Jeep, or I guess it's a pickup truck, remote controlled pickup truck that they make. That's a great little kit for people to get. It's like a $250, $300 kit though. But you build a remote controlled off-road truck that you control with your phone.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. The only thing that I didn't like about it is it's a little too slow. So I changed the gear ratio on it. And so it goes a little faster.
you put a slingshot on it, right? With a linear actuator and shoved it.
Yeah, that thing exploded.
Just make sure you tie a good knot next time, Rico.
Exactly. I've learned so many new knots since then.
Cool. So Lego Technic, anything else? Or, I mean, I can cut it right there. Up to you. Nope.
Just start researching a bunch of different things. Like, two great sources are just Adam Savage's One Day Builds and Mark Rober's Anything.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. For inspiration. Good.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Well, hey, guys, you heard it right here. You saw it. You know, if Mark Rober and Adam Savage inspire Enrico de la Vega, who's making magic in all sorts of amazing ways on TV and film, well, mostly TV, right? Like TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, then I think that's for you too. Anybody can see their work online, Mark and Adam, just go on YouTube. And yeah, if you haven't, re-explore your Lego kits. I was big into Legos actually myself when I was about 7 or 8. I had a big box of them and I remember spending hours and hours and hours with them, and you've inspired me to revisit some of that after this conversation, which is pretty awesome.
I'll send you some links.
Okay. So finally, where can our viewers and listeners learn more about Enrico de la Vega, any of the projects that you're working on, and anything else? This is your chance to let the viewers and listeners know.
If anybody wants to know anything more about me, which boggles my mind, no, you can go to my website. It's 555entertainment.com, 555ent.com.
The word triple, the number 5, and then ENT.
Yep. And that's a little bit of history of what I do, how to get in touch with me. But as far as projects coming up, I rarely talk about upcoming projects because, as we all know, sometimes things fall through.
Right. Well, with TV, you can't. I know you can't because of that, and they don't want to disappoint and leak out stuff. So whatever you're allowed to talk about that you'd like to promote or let people know. We talked about Big Trick Energy. That's very recent.
Very recent. They just did the second episode. On True TV. I believe that they're going to be putting it out on their YouTube channel as well. YouTube.
Okay.
True TV on YouTube. I know they have episode 1 on there. And I believe we filmed 6 or 8 episodes. I actually don't know. But we came up with a lot of fun stuff for that show. Those guys are really good guys. There's some really goofball magic going on and some good head scratching stuff, but a lot of fun to work on.
Okay. All good. All great stuff. All inspiring, all top notch, high quality. Well, this has been an amazing chat with you, Rico. Again,
thanks, Sean.
I want to thank my viewers And my listeners, if this is your first time to the channel watching, please, you know what to do. Subscribe, hit the red button down below. If you're not subscribed, why the heck aren't you? We're talking with Rico. He's like the underground legend in the biz here. He's given us some major, amazing knowledge to inspire your creativity. And if you're listening just to the sound of our voice on like Spotify or one of the other podcast apps, feel free to follow us so you can listen and learn and be inspired while you're driving the car. It's better than being on a Zoom call while you're driving a car. I've seen that done. That's dangerous. Don't do that. But either way, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day, Rico. And thanks to my audience of subscribers. And we'll see you on the next episode of Making Magic.